The wrongs, we must right. The fights, we must win. The future we must secure together for our nation. This is what's in front of us. This determines what's next for all of us. We are Marines. We were made for this.
I could see exactly like the dark color scheme of the map. I could see the thin lines connecting, and I was like, done. Like, yes.
The thing about news is actually the same thing about YouTube.
They have to be home runs every single time.
Is it clickbait or click worthy?
Is advertising the right model for this?
Boy, that's a big number. That's way more than a normal brand.
We did get called out at one point.
It almost made me confused and angry.
And that is a travesty. That's a failing of our information ecosystem.
I don't think it's sustainable.
It would get 100 million views per season. And then one day, gone. Decided she didn't want to do it anymore.
Today on the Colin and Smear Show, we're joined by Johnny and Iz Harris.
These are just two of my all-time favorite people. We could have talked to them for 5 hours.
So if you're not familiar with Johnny Harris, he's a creator, filmmaker, storyteller with over 6.4 million subscribers on YouTube. And he spent some time creating with Vox and was most known for his show called Borders. And then he left to go independent and start his own channel. And through that process has created a lot of really impressive work, including a piece with the New York Times that won an Emmy.
And now more recently, Johnny, along with his wife and business partner, Iz Harris, have started a new company called New Press. It is a YouTube first media company. And we talked to Iz about how she operationalizes the channels, how she supports not only Johnny's channel, but all of the channels under New Press.
It's really cool to get to have this conversation with Iz and get to talk to her about her own creator journey and her decision to go behind the scenes at the company.
I trust and respect both of them greatly. And we learned a lot in this conversation. I think you will too.
Today's episode is sponsored by Airlo. That honestly makes me really excited because I've been a longtime customer of Airlo. Airlo is the best way to get an eSIM for when you travel.
If you travel a lot, and specifically if you're a creator or an entrepreneur that travels a lot, it is an absolute necessity that you stay connected while you're traveling.
It's so unbelievably easy to use. All you have to do is download Airlo, then search for the country that you're going to, find the data plan that works best for you. I like a lot of data because I watch a lot of YouTube when I'm on the road. Then you just purchase and install that plan. And when you land, all you have to do is activate it and you are ready to go off the airplane.
Airlo will get you connected in over 200 countries. There's no physical SIMs and there's no hidden fees, which can add up. Let me tell you a story.
Okay.
Florida man goes to the Swiss Alps. He uses a pretty standard amount of data.
Okay.
How big do you think the bill was from his roaming charges?
So he's like watching videos and stuff?
Yeah, he's just, but like standard use, yeah.
$150?
$143,000.
No, is that
roaming.
Real?
Yeah.
That's real.
That's real.
In roaming charges.
Yes.
Don't be like the Florida man
that's
that goes to the Swiss Alps. That's crazy.
Just use Airlo.
So if you have any plans to get on a plane this year, download Airlo and get yourself an eSIM. And if you use our code Colin and Samir 3, you get $3 off your first purchase. You can click the link in our description to get yourself set up or scan the QR code on the screen right now. Check out Airlo. Thanks so much for sponsoring this episode. And now for our interview with Johnny and Iz Harris. All right, Johnny and Iz, welcome to the show.
Great to be here.
So good to have you.
There's nothing better than Johnny Harris having a bunch of newspapers. Every time I see you, you have newspapers.
I love newspapers. I'm a dyslexic man who needs something physical in front of me, and this is how I solve that.
A genuine part of my week is sorting through the week's newspapers. What stays,
actually,
what goes. Yeah.
Like what to throw out because there's so many newspapers.
Sometimes I want
to
wait to the weekend to read the like long read of the Financial Times. Sometimes, you know, and it also makes really good like fire starter. If you have a bonfire in the backyard. So dual use.
Yeah.
It's good that you're really this guy.
Yeah. Is that like a brand perception thing? Yeah. Or is that really
real? This is a real thing. This is a real thing.
That's real.
And I will not apologize.
Do you consider your channel news? Like, is the Johnny Harris channel news?
That's a deep question.
Right.
The timing of that question.
As the kids would say, I raw dog.
Yes, you just raw dog right into it.
Does that work?
That didn't work. We're just going to try it a few more times.
This is like the older YouTuber cohort.
Nothing like dropping a joke from before filming.
You can't do that. You can't drop an inside joke from before you started pressing record.
They get it. So the definition of news is in flux right now, and it has been for a few years. And this isn't just me saying this. This is like real people who study media have come out and said, like, young people don't think of news the same way that the old guard has. In the old days, news was what is happening right now that is most important. It's usually sensational events happening around the world. There's a shooting in Texas. There is an invasion of some country. That is becoming less and less interesting to people. People don't feel like they need to know about the shooting in Texas. They're like, this is not actually relevant to my life. And so I would say under the new definition, I hope, what we do is considered news. People are learning about the world. They're learning about current events that are somewhat timely, but it's a much wider aperture of what is considered news, which I love.
We're also really careful, particularly with our team internally, to distinguish between doing the news and being a newsroom. A newsroom is a very different thing. Your job is to report on what is urgently happening and to be the first to get to it. And we're very committed to reporting on things that we think we'd add value to, but there's a lot of filters it goes through. Like, is it visual? Will we add value? Is it something that resonates with you or any of the other creators? It's not typically going to be the first take, but we do try to, and it sounds cheesy, but like have the best take.
I think what I enjoy about your form of news, it is what's happening or what's happened and why it matters.
Yeah.
The majority of the news that I feel like I consume on cable television is what could happen.
Yeah.
Seldom is it like, this is what's happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So much of it is filled with like, this could happen.
Yeah.
Or that was the
that
shift.
That could happen.
Yeah. That resulted in the shift of, you know, to 24-hour news. It used to be 1 hour in the evening. It's 24 hours.
Right.
How are you going to fill that space? I wouldn't be able to with like just what happened. So you get a lot more just
speculative.
It's also, though, at extreme competition with Twitter and Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
News, right? Like traditional news is that extreme competition when people probably turn to Twitter for their news way more than they do.
It's a way more efficient.
Right? It's
you're going to get the most succinct, like this just happened.
You'll get clips, you'll get individual voices, which people want more than they want CNN telling them.
Right.
They want the people they follow to curate that for them.
I don't appreciate talking for 24 hours and just adding noise to the void. But we do need someone when there are big moments in history and there have been big moments in our lifetimes to say this just happened and to be with people as it is happening. So I think news, even legacy media, has a place. It's not the place that we're trying to fill. And it's not the place that I feel is most valuable today to young people and newer audiences. I think what it's missing is the why. Why did it happen? How do I understand what might happen again?
I think one thing that is substantially different about what you guys do, and because you're storytellers, is contextualize things.
Mm-hmm.
Context in arguments and disagreements, just from like a human to human perspective, oftentimes like can take the pressure out of a situation, right?
Yeah.
It can like remove, if like you're having an argument with someone, you're like, hold on, let's back up. And like, how did we get here? That oftentimes can like depressurize a situation.
Totally.
But we lack a lot of context, and we will continue to lack context because of the speed at which communication is happening.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
and yet there is an appetite we've found, which is why we have a channel, and now it's several channels that do this. There is an appetite for context. I think when I started at Vox, Vox was built off of this very pain point in the market to say like, there isn't context, we're going to explain the news. And they did that really well. And I learned sort of under that tradition. And I think what I feel really hopeful of is that people more and more are done just reading the headlines and feeling like that's all they need to know. They are curious. They will show up for a 30-minute deep dive on something if it's presented in a way that actually empowers them to understand it. And that's really hopeful for me.
I think the volume of news and the fact that it is so polarized makes it really difficult to know when you look at a headline or an article, is that actually the take? Like, is that the real take, the factual take? And I'm not talking about like, you know, the kind of fear mongering that's around media. I just mean the very necessitation of creating a title that grabs eyes is going to mean that that headline could be misleading or miscontext or not capture the full picture. And so we want to be the place where you can go to catch up on the full picture and feel like you can navigate that article.
The thing about news is actually the same thing about YouTube, which is like without a good title and thumbnail, yeah. no one's watching it, right? Yeah. The first rule of YouTube is if they don't click, they don't watch.
Yep.
It's the same rule about anything on the internet, any storytelling on
yeah.
the internet.
Yeah.
So you do have to balance that, because I'd imagine like the videos you've made, or the videos you made on Trump and Kamala, like was one of them a 1 out of 10 and the other one was a different performer, meaning like best performing versus...
That was a bit wild. I expected Kamala to severely underperform. Mm-hmm. We kept being hopeful that people would want to learn about her because we sure. realized we knew so little, but mm-hmm. both performed really, really well. Trump performed really, really well for much longer.
Yeah.
And this was pre him becoming president. So yeah. that obviously changes things. But we were very careful with both of those pieces with the packaging. We tested the exact same thumbnails. We used the exact yeah. same titles. We used yeah. the exact same treatments, music art throughout art everything. Direction. Their lives could not be more different.
Yeah.
Trump has lived this glam, like fascinating, juicy gossip column-y life.
Yeah,
and then Kamala is like a prosecutor. And that's really, so that's cool. really about it. She yeah, obviously yeah. has an interesting upbringing and life before, which there's actually not too much you can find on all of that.
Yeah.
But in terms of her career and his career, one is like clickier. Made for movies,
yeah.
you know?
But that's really interesting about the art direction. And like, you know, I really appreciate that you guys look at that, you know, so mm. closely. But it's bizarre that advertising is the business model for this.
Yeah.
yeah.
It just is, right? Because then you just can't cover things that won't get high viewership.
Yeah.
You
just it wasn't can't. Supposed to be. It wasn't supposed to be. When it was 1 hour, it was stipulated that there could not be advertising for that 1 hour. Mm. And the history is really fascinating and worth looking into. It completely has shifted news. Completely.
Of course.
And irrevocably. Yeah. I do not think that there is a way to reverse the clock on what it's become.
Kind of why I love local news right yeah. now. Like I will yeah. often tune into like KTLA because yeah. it feels very pure. It's I'm sure so there are many forces at work, but I watch
but it's
it
protected.
And it's just like, there was a really long line at the cinema. Today. Yeah. And I'm like, yeah, yeah. okay. Like I kind of want to know that. Right.
Yeah.
Like,
so yeah. I see, I
so
think,
I.
you know, like I do,
so
like
do
this
I.
is where I live.
I think like, there is going to be a backlash from this kind of amorphous global news that we all have to know about what's happening in, you know, everywhere in the world. There's going to be an appetite for just like, well, what's going on around the street, you know? And yeah. like, and like this sort of advertising 24 hours. I think there's going to be a backlash to that too. I think news and media in 10 years is going to be like sort of unrecognizable. There's not going to be cable anymore.
I would say it already has.
It's already dramatically it's already changed since I was a
but
kid.
You still but have
the dinosaurs. Like the dinosaurs are still there doing their thing.
Yeah.
And there's
I
still
think
a
it's
guy
like
with
a dinosaur
suit.
That's empty. Like I think it's a facade and it's going to.
I mean, there's nothing crazier than election night, which is like the Super Bowl for yeah. news, right? And it's probably the highest ad dollars, right? That they sell.
Yeah.
And you know, like it's bizarre to switch between the networks and have them just zooming into maps and,
yeah.
you know, zooming out and
giant
like
iPads.
Yeah. Over. They have to hold your attention. It's yeah. the same thing that we have now metrics around as YouTube creators, right? Mm-hmm. We have to have a high click-through rate. Mm-hmm. We have to have long average view durations.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone in media follows the same rules, mm-hmm. which then changes what stories we can tell.
Yeah.
I think everyone who's selling something. Everyone who's selling something, you have to have like there's you have to have high click through rate.
I
Red
just think
Bull
it feels
have high.
Agreed, but
rate,
it feels
know?
Different in the context when you're selling information.
Oh, it's so totally. Different
when you're
Don't
selling information. It feels
yeah.
very different.
Also, I think it's so
different.
Interesting to look at the fact that like the difference between like Anderson Cooper and you is that Anderson Cooper is not like he has no hand probably in the ads that play.
Yeah,
on
yeah.
CNN.
Well,
like you have to.
And that,
have an opinion
what,
on the ads.
What we, yeah, because I'm saying the words.
Yeah,
it's exactly
coming
right.
out of your mouth.
We have tried to create a certain separation of church and state in the business. I'm not a normal YouTube creator because Izzy runs the operation and the business and, you know, informs all of the creativity as well. But like she really, there's a garden wall between like the deals we do and like the journalism that I'm supposed to be doing over here in terms of the editorial and the reporting. And mm-hmm. that is sort of our version of that, but it is totally different than Anderson Cooper, because I still have to get up and be like, thank you, NordVPN, for sponsoring.
And there's
video.
A garden wall beyond that.
I sit back. That's right. Yeah. I sit back.
It's cool Johnny does
It's cool Johnny he does it.
It's
on his couch.
It's really relaxed. Just talking about VPNs that gets him
super chill.
But then, like, when you're talking to advertisers, do they know the subject matter of the videos, and do they either adjust rates based on that or ask to be on specific episodes?
They'll ask to not be on specific episodes.
Yeah.
There's certain subject matter that's much harder to sponsor.
Of course.
They have zero editorial say over what we say in our videos.
Sure.
And I know you say, of course, but I actually don't think that that is the case across the board with information on YouTube. I would be surprised if brands are not having impact on what is being said.
I say, of course, just because
I know
you. I know you. So I know your values.
It's been interesting to see how many brands are used to having that say. Yeah. And we're lucky to work with a big agency that is, you know, they're legends in this world. And so
we work with the same UTF.
And so for them, you know, it's pretty easy for them to like throw their weight around a little bit and be like, absolutely not.
For sure.
You're
That's
not going
to
do that.
A great benefit. To
it's the
UTF.
Totally. Best part.
Yeah.
It's the best part. And so beyond me being a garden wall, you know, I'm not reporting to him on conversions or anything like that, because that was the stuff that for me would just like dissolve my energy towards creating. Mm. But there's an additional garden wall with UTA, where they are making sure that they don't have any say in what we're saying or what we're making. They do have the right to say, we don't want to be on that video. There are a lot of brands who don't ask and don't care. And then there are other brands who really care. And we're in a fortunate position now where we work with really only brands who don't care and are happy to be on anything we're making. And that's amazing. But it took a long time to get there.
Yeah.
What do you think creators need to be aware of who do make journalistic content on YouTube, who deliver information, when it comes to taking on an advertiser?
That's you. I'm like,
yeah, I think you have to be really careful of being advertised, you have to be really careful about advertising for someone you might report on at a future point. So we, for instance, don't work with governments. You know, we get approached by
tourism,
the Swiss
boards,
government, tourism boards,
like
UAE, like a bunch of different places. And that's a hard no for us.
Yeah.
It would be the same for certain companies that we might report on. So I would advise, be careful about that. That's a good thing to be careful about.
Is there a check you were offered in that context that you were like, I can't believe we just turned that down, but we had to?
I mean, the UAE is a perfect example. I really don't want it to be misconstrued that we were like, oh man, we really wanted to work with them. But they've got
a lot of money.
They've got money.
And they're pouring it on creators right now.
Mm-hmm.
Like that, there were moments, because I was like, oh, is this, and I, like, again, it wasn't tempting, but it was like, boy, that's a big number. Like, that's way more than a normal brand.
And they're smart. They're saying like, we don't need to have any say. We don't need to, this is just like, it's kind of getting us in the door and we'll fly you out and this will, you can tell the story that you want to. But when you understand how governments work, you know that that's not the case, right?
So
being careful about working with any sort of brand or entity that you may report on is crucial. I think bigger agencies are going to protect you better. They just are, because they have that kind of legitimacy in those spaces and the brands fear them a little bit. They need them. And so they'll kind of get in line and listen. I think finding brands that align with your mission, that really are excited to be a part of what new news looks like, is key. That takes a while, especially when you're covering war and genocides and things that brands really don't want to be a part of or be associated with.
Is advertising the right model for this?
TBD.
Are you talking macro? Absolutely not.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm talking micro.
I'm talking about the YouTube news world. Like, is a 60-second ad integration the correct model?
Currently, we are kind of insurgents in the creator economy who have come in to say, like, we're going to do news, but we're going to sort of use the like influencer economy to make money off of that. Yeah. And like Izzy has built a business that's somehow able to do that, but it is not optimized for that. Like a lifestyle and travel and sort of other YouTube entertainment type stuff is way more optimized for this economy. I look at these guys make money off of subscribers, people who pay money to get the newspaper. Right. I'm a subscriber to a bunch of newspapers. And I think that ethic is very natural for people to say, like, I want to support it because I like this journalism and I don't want it to be overly influenced by brands. But news has always been reliant on advertising. Yeah. Whenever there's been news, there has been advertising. Even here, there is advertising to some degree. And so I think that will always be a part of it, but it is a big part of it for us. It is our business right now is advertisement.
Yeah. But I want to circle back really quickly to your question of if it's a good thing, because I do think that it's important to understand that it is the thing. It is the way to fund what we're doing and to make it accessible for free to audiences. And so is it a good thing? I'd argue no, but it can be, that's a gradient there, right?
To clarify, it's better than no thing. Yeah,
yes.
It's better than no thing.
I wouldn't be able to do that.
I'm not saying good thing, bad thing. I'm saying is it the right model? Because something has to fund it.
Yeah.
Something has to fund it. Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's subscription though. I think like toothpaste is out of the tube. Mm-hmm. Everyone, I think, or the masses would prefer advertising, actually.
We can't take it away.
I think there may be a group of people who are like, yes, I do want to support the New York Times. I do want to pay for this. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I think the masses are okay.
It's also advertising. It's also that we want it to be accessible.
Yeah.
I don't want it to be only accessible to people like us that are subscribing to news. I want it to be accessible to the 12-year-old behind their keyboard who wants to learn about like the war in Bosnia. I want it to be accessible to some 54-year-old who is just sitting on their couch and suddenly wants to learn about who got rich off the war in Afghanistan. You know, like I don't want what we are making to be inaccessible at any stage.
The trade-off is that it has to be algorithmically accessible.
That
is the trade-off.
Yeah.
It's like if it's going to be advertising back, it needs to be algorithmically accessible.
Which we optimize our videos for.
Which you optimize it for.
We do.
It's not necessarily a bad thing. Because
we can do our journalism within the algorithm. We do the title and thumb thing. I do this on a thumb. And can we get the
and that's why it works.
And that's why it works. It's actually that face.
It's that face.
Every time.
But you guys have really nice thumbnails.
Well, that's our thumbnail designer. And
Izzy works very hard on that.
It's improving. Disappear. But I think that with the packaging conversation, the question is what's behind the packaging? And is the packaging, I mean, we talked about this really early on in YouTube. It was a big thing of like, is it clickbait or click worthy, you know? And so with the packaging, is it click worthy? Mm-hmm. Are we following through on the promise that the packaging, you know, shows? And then is it substantive? Is it something that we're proud of? If it is, which it is, then I feel pretty good about wrapping it in something shiny.
Yeah.
I'm okay with that if it's going to get someone to click through and learn about something that they otherwise wouldn't have.
Yeah.
You know what's one of your best videos, in my opinion? Bread.
Oh. Yeah. That was a fun one.
How the U.S. ruined bread.
I want to ask about those types of videos, actually. Yeah. Because some of my favorites are like the myth of shampoo.
Yeah. These are all my weird
McDonald's
little
ice cream
obsessions.
I mean, that one. Yeah.
Where do these
fit in? Are you going to be making more of those?
It's funny because we're talking about like Trump and Kamala. These like deep like dives into political candidates, implications on the country. You're talking about, you know, borders and war. And then in the middle, we also get what's up with bread.
Is that like the Wordle? Like your version of Wordle?
What do you mean?
It's a really good question. Is it like entertainment fun?
So I have a theory on that. I have a theory on Wordle.
A little.
And our version of Wordle. I don't know where those fit in, other than I started a YouTube channel well before it was like a business as a outlet for me to explore my curiosity. That was the root of this. That's how it all started. And it has now turned into a thing called news on YouTube, which I'm very proud of and very excited about. We're building out what we believe is the new version of news. And yet there's this weird paradox where like the definition of news allows for those weird, quirky interests to also be to fit under that umbrella where I can do bread and shampoo right next to like a Trump investigation about money laundering in Egypt or whatever. And it's like that. The audience is like, okay,
But it's also
and
why
I like it.
It's
I
also
have
why
no problem
it fits.
With it. I think it's fantastic.
Yeah, it's also why it fits squarely. It is him. Everything that you see on this channel, on his channel, is his brain just put into video. It is everything that he's excited about and energized about and curious about. And if it's not, it typically underperforms. You know, we tried to scale that whole thing. And I think everyone's been down that route of like, how do you scale a creator themselves? You don't.
You don't.
Yeah. You don't.
Because taste because is it's not authentic.
Yes. It's not. Yes. Exactly.
And it's taste and it's this weird passion of like, I'm obsessed with this and I want deeply for you to understand it too as the audience.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to obsess over every word and every little frame to make it perfect. That is a very delicate thing that does not scale.
What I think is really fun about something like Bread or Swiss Bunkers or, you know, what I think is super fun about Bread and McDonald's ice cream machines is that when you kind of like get all of the fluffy, pretty stuff and fun stuff out of the way, which I love that stuff. There is something to be learned from each of those pieces.
Bread tells the story of America,
Which
is crazy. Yes. When I watched that and then I watched it two or three more times, once with my brother and once with my wife.
Well, that's
because I was like, I need you guys to watch this. This gives context to America.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And again, these are very nuanced subject matters, but like that's what's amazing is also over time, when you build a brand, you become associated with something. So like if I see someone else make a Bread video and you make a Bread video, I know what it means for Johnny Harris to make a Bread video.
Yeah.
It's not, it's going to be about the broader human content.
I want to make a Bread video.
That is.
You can.
You can make some sourdough
bread. I'll make a Bread video with you.
I've seen Wonder Bread in your house.
Oh, wow. Okay. Whoa.
Hold on.
That feels like accusatory.
Are you a symbol? Are you a symbol of the destruction
of culture between like a nice country white and Wonder Bread?
No, that's not country white.
Yeah.
Love it.
Can you guys work this out after the show?
I don't know Wonder Bread
in my house. I like Wonder
Not in
Bread.
This house, in your previous house.
Oh, I was a different person
that
house.
That was his previous house. Okay.
I don't want to.
Yeah, that's just, previous him.
Yeah.
Okay.
Also, I was like born and raised in New Jersey on Wonder Bread. And
New Jersey is the epicenter of American manufacturing.
He's come all the way to country white.
I've come all the way to country white.
I think you need to back up.
As he was on his way to LA.
And occasionally I go to the farmer's market and I get a rustic loaf.
Did you guys
maybe even
have
Italian.
Ezekiel bread growing up?
Oh, yeah.
Ezekiel
like bread is,
but
seeds.
I didn't, because I didn't grow up in LA or Ashland. Ezekiel bread was like
LA and Ashland are the two like, homes of Ezekiel bread.
Actually, kind
but
of.
But actually, yes.
Obnoxious like, hippie food.
It
yeah,
is.
Yeah,
fair. It yeah. Fair.
So, but two back to the filter and back to bread.
We had better childhoods. That's all this means.
That's all that means, everybody.
I do see as he said the channel as like an expression of my brain. My brain is interested in a lot of other things that you don't see because they aren't case studies in some context that I want you to understand. What you end up seeing about shampoo or ice cream machines or bread, in addition to like the more heavy hitting stuff, is a click for me where I'm like, there is a bigger thing here that 2 million people should know about. And it's fun. Sometimes it's a fun entry, sometimes it's a harder one, but 2 million people should know about this because this is very juicy. And so there is this like driving a lot of the content is a deep desire for a lot of people to understand this thing that I just understood. And back to your point about authenticity and like that sort of vernacular, if people want to just have a human explain something or hang out with them, I really think that that is the defining attribute of this shift in media. It's like, I want to feel like someone's genuinely interested in talking about this and not standing in front of the microphone, reciting things in a weird voice that I don't really understand, which is the traditional news format. It is alien, it's other, it's sort of, I'm on a pedestal speaking down, voice of God. This is a very different thing. And I love that it exists because it allows us to express very authentically to the audience. Mm-hmm.
Can we talk about the business of both Johnny Harris and New Press, which is your guys'
sure
company
can.
As you're starting to build new channels? Because I've been watching Johnny for a long time. I've also been watching you, Iz, for a long time in your days as a YouTube creator.
Yeah.
There is a tangible difference in, you know, my experience of Johnny on Vox, Johnny as an independent creator, and then the Johnny Harris organization today.
Mm-hmm.
And from our conversations, I understand that that has a lot to do with you
has everything to do with Izzy. Absolutely. Yeah.
Like you are an unbelievable storyteller, right? And I think there's a few storytellers on YouTube who I think are like at the top of the list. You're at the top of my list. Thomas Bragg is another one who's at the top of my list from Yes Theory. Like there's a few people who I'm just like, I watch their videos and I cannot believe how good they are.
I'm just super jealous.
And I just, jealous as hell. Just like, if I could do that,
the highest praise.
But you and I were talking on the phone the other day and I was sharing, you know, that I've had aspirations in my past, probably when I was younger, of building like a big media company. And as I've gotten older, I lose those aspirations, or I've lost them, you know, more and more of like simplicity is something I value. I was surprised to hear you guys had 25 employees. I didn't know that, or 25 team members.
I was surprised to hear it too. Yeah. I don't know where they all. But
there was like an inflection point of output.
Yeah.
I remember I feel like I'd be like waiting around for a Johnny Harris video.
2022.
I'm not waiting anymore. 2022 it's just always there.
Is every week. I want to hear the story of is your decision to go, I'm no longer a YouTube creator, but I'm still, or not still, I'm going to play this role instead. This like operational producer role.
Yeah, it's not something that I've talked about much outside of, or at all, outside of like close friend circles, because it was really loaded for a really long time. And I may get teary because I do. And anyone who did watch my videos knows that, but...
Wait, let me set you up though first.
Yeah, please. Actually.
It's not like this was about to go on an emotional journey, Johnny.
I was just about to say like the best thing ever.
No, but
like, hey, set me up.
I'm going to set you up.
This better be a damn good alley-oop.
Yeah.
It'd be really fucking good. The music was just about to like turn on.
Actually,
I was leaned in.
That's all.
I was like, okay, this is about to get emotional.
Retention, your retention curve.
Actually, just, we don't normally do this,
but I may play some music under that and then I'll rip it.
Zoom in.
Yeah.
I think for the audience, as a storyteller who likes context, the audience should know that Izzy started a YouTube channel before I did. She was the sort of trailblazer in our family and started a travel and lifestyle and mental health and food channel that was very beloved. It was a mix of vlogs and then like cinematic kind of like poetic pieces. She very quickly grew a large audience and was very beloved. And then one day, gone, decided she didn't want to do it anymore, even though she was like growing. So that was the context. Back to the emotional moment.
And I will say it was one day to the next.
It really was.
It really was. So it's so complicated. And like looking back, I have some better understanding of it. I was talking to my sister the other day and I was saying it's like it was a breakup with like a bad boyfriend, you know, but man, did I love him. Like I loved that boyfriend so much and I was almost hooked on him. And we've all been there, right?
To clarify, like, the boyfriend is YouTube.
The boyfriend,
the boyfriend is the proverbial boyfriend.
It's YouTube. Metaphorical boyfriend.
It's YouTube.
It's YouTube. And for me, what led up to it was I was kind of at like the height of the success I'd seen thus far in doing what I was doing. I had shared a lot about my life, a lot. And a lot about some of the most personal things in my life. I had shared about sexual assault. I had shared about my son who is autistic and raising him, our son. He's yours
too. I'm the father.
Yes, yes, yeah. He is the father.
It was confusing because it could have been YouTube.
That was the father.
YouTube, the father?
YouTube is not the father. It's the bad boyfriend.
Yeah,
let me set you up.
It was so necessary. I'm so glad I did it. No regret.
It really added. I appreciate it.
Can I ask you a question?
Everyone's just interjecting.
Well, you invited the interjection, which made me feel like it was necessary. During that time of building this YouTube channel and sharing all this stuff personally, was that motivated? Did you feel motivated by money, status, fame? Were any of those motivating factors?
Not for most of it. So when I started on YouTube, I didn't know anything about YouTube. I'd never watched YouTube. And then I called Johnny and I was like, we're going to be travel bloggers.
Bloggers. She said bloggers.
And I was a filmmaker at the time. And he's like, vloggers. And then he had watched Casey Neistat. He had really shaped his filmmaking.
Big time.
And to be totally honest, because we had grown up in a more conservative upbringing, We were Mormon. Shocker. Johnny has a million videos about it. Yeah. There was a lot of self-doubt on my part about going out and doing something that was not mothering. And there was doubt on his part. And that was just a real thing. Yeah. And it's not something doubt that about, most doubt about that me like, having a career.
Because Izzy graduated and college knowing that she was going to be a mom for this.
Yeah.
And like, that was it. Like in terms of like, there wasn't ever plans for a career.
Yeah. And to be fair to him, our son had recently lost his language. I had taken a step back from our wedding filmmaking business. I had spent 2 years being at home with him and I was his full-time everything. And it was so unbelievably intense a time. But when I called him, he was like, vlogger. And then he's like, are you sure? And he really was trying to say like, hey, don't set yourself up for
I'm like, this is
disappointment.
This is back then it felt very saturated. I was like, everyone's a travel vlogger honestly, and like this is hard. Yeah. I was like, this is not gonna be easy. I was working at Vox trying to make it on YouTube there. I had a whole media company, and that was hard to get subscribers. I was like, you're gonna like squeeze in travel vlogging in the like in your free time and somehow get a following. I was like, this is I didn't push too hard against it. I was just like, this is going to be really hard. Like, let's just make sure
kid came up to me and said, like, I'm going to start a YouTube channel, I would probably have, I'd have a similar response, which is like, are you sure? But it was a dynamic at play. And I had a chip on my shoulder of being like, I can fucking do this. Like, I'm going to do it. And that day that I had called him at work, I started watching all 100 of Casey Neistat's vlogs that were available at that time. And I studied the shit out of these videos. And I just started learning. And we didn't have a lot of money at the time. And it sounded great to go to Costa Rica on someone else's dime, right? So I started making, and it was a slow road to, the amount of success that I had. And for the majority of the time that I was creating, it really was, and I feel a little like saying this, but like it really was that we were genuinely living an interesting life, and then we were capturing that life. And then we were putting that life out to people. But what you see quickly happens is like the tail, you kind of start chasing like the tail, right? And like suddenly you're starting to live an interesting life so you can capture it. And that started to happen really at the tail end. And I think it was a big part of what led up to me stepping away.
Little foreshadow here. In the process of doing this, when she had like 10,000 subscribers, she was hiring people. And I was just starting to dabble with my own YouTube channel. And I was like, you're hiring people? Like, how are you doing this? And she's like, yeah, I'm hiring people. We have a process here. We have project management for my videos. And me, like one man band guy, I was like, I go into my black box and I make a video and it comes out, it's a video. And so
and you're at Vox and you're like, no one will project manage me.
Yeah.
You know, like, we just were touch
any part of the I was like so protective and inefficient. She always had this knack for like, dude, just systematize it. Like, let's do it like this. And that she built something. She really built a little organization around her thing.
And I was developing a skill set with that. And that was both fortunate because I was able to transition my team over to him.
Yeah, that's huge. Yeah.
You know?
And that was so fortuitous. Like, again, I was scrappy one-man band. Mm-hmm. And she just brought that over and started to like orchestrate around me.
Yeah.
And that took us some time. Like, it did. Because I was a bit of a stallion.
Yeah. What? And I
wait, that's the stallion best way to describe it.
It's like the kindest.
Was that
twist.
Like a,
it's the coolest
way to describe it?
You were a stallion, like you're
interpret
like,
for me. What do you mean?
I'll tell you. I'm
curious what you're understanding because
I want to hear your interpretation of me being a stallion.
I am probably more similar to you in that, like, I know I am in that, like, every time Samir has hired anyone, starting with Jesse in the beginning, I'm like, what do we need Jesse for? Why is Jesse here? Because like I film, I edit, and I do the things the way I like to do them.
Yes.
Like,
yes. And wild stallion.
Yeah.
Yes. Hard to tame.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. And like,
I just never thought of myself as a wild horse stallion
to tame. When I hear stallion,
like whimsy.
But now I am.
Yes.
Yeah. It feels like my interpretation of what you just said is like, I'm like a hunk.
Oh, and that made it really hard, you know?
Because I'm a stallion. And it's like, whoa, bro, this is a weird curveball.
I was like, how do I understand this right now? Like,
I'm like feeling insecure about like your boyfriend, YouTuber boyfriend, but I'm a stallion.
Yeah, the issue is I'm so attractive. Yeah.
It's really tough.
No, but I am an unruly, unpredictable, don't like systems or predictability. I want to just go in and break things and make it. Same.
And there's a lot of magic to be had there. And I think that, you know, we can get into where the company exists now, but yes, he was a, like a stallion, short, punk, mixed with whimsy. Like he was like a unicorn. Like he just was like difficult to rein in. And so that was difficult, but also there was competition between us because I had given up this thing. And then I was doing this other thing and I couldn't do that other thing as well because I hadn't taken the time to study that other thing because we made two totally different crafts.
Yeah.
Now, sure, we can co-produce, but it took years to get there. And so I'm glad at the time because I'm like, oh, I can transfer my skills, and I could. But man, was it tense between us for a period of time to figure out our rhythm.
Especially on the creative side. Mm-hmm. Like her coming in and being like, I'm going to operationalize your chaos.
That would have been fine.
Was awesome. I was like, great. I don't have to think about project management. I didn't have to think about sponsors. I was like, this is amazing.
Yeah.
But then she's like, but I want a say in these notes. And I'm like, but this is my thing. And I was cagey about it because of previous comment about being a hunk stallion. but she was like, no, I'm a creative. I'm a filmmaker.
Yeah.
And so we had that sort of tension. Mm-hmm. With time, there was like, you studied the craft. Like one thing about Izzy is she's really good at getting good at things. Like she will be like, it's maybe a pride thing or something where it's like, if I'm not good at this, I'm going to show that I can get good at it. And she got good at finance and deals and accounting and mm-hmm. spreadsheets and explainers about international affairs. And now she is involved from the ideation and pitching all the way through to art direction. She leaves notes on.
Do you like green light an episode? Like,
yeah.
If you guys have five ideas and you're excited about all five, are you the one who goes, we're doing this one next?
So that wasn't the case for a long time, but now we do story days together and we're green lighting side by side. And so it takes the shape more like, let's say Johnny gets really excited about something and I'll kind of put on the brakes a little bit and be like, I don't know. I just don't feel like we've landed there. And like,
pull back,
if Johnny says,
I have a Trump card.
If he says, like, I see it,
the Donald Trump card,
and I know it will be good.
He's looking at me this whole time.
He's pointing at you.
Yeah, he really is.
If he says, I see it and I know it's going to be good, then like there's enough trust between us that we can like disagree and commit, you know?
Well, and part about being the stallion is like,
disagree and commit.
And that's a Bezos.
You've read some books.
I'm big on disagree and commit. It's important.
Friedman, Jeff company. Bezos podcast.
There it is.
That's exactly where that's from.
Yeah, and it's a fantastic ethos. Pull one over me. I see that now. But I'm going to keep trying.
Actually goes back to our New Press. One of the things that we identified early on, because we did try to scale me and be like, let's operationalize Johnny to the extreme. What we realized is that like, if it's going to be creator led, the creator at the top of each of these channels has to feel empowered to be like, this is my brain expressed.
Yeah.
So Izzy comes in, empowers, she brings in all these story ideas. We do this thing, but she does know at the end of the day, like, I'm doing a disservice if I try to bulldoze something in.
Yeah.
And
I took years of like proposing strategies to vet stories because he was operating almost entirely from the like gut. And that's great. The gut is a great place to vet stories, but it should be one of the tools and probably the veto tool, right, in your tool belt, but it shouldn't be the only tool. Mm-hmm. And so now I'm excited about the story. I just don't feel like we've landed on it. That's me saying that. And then it's like, what if we like shift here? We shift here. We make it a bigger question or like, and what I think I bring is the ability to say like, I don't know. And for that exact reason, I can relate to the audience better than you on this, you know?
Will you paint me a picture? Is this like a writer's room or is this just you two? Like 25 people is a lot of people. So I'm like trying to understand what these people do. And also the original team that you brought in.
Yes.
Who were those people and what did they do?
At the time it was an editor and assistant. And then once I came on board, I hired another editor. So it was small. Once, and those people grew.
And I had an editor assistant that I had brought on.
So our team is made up of a lot of post-production people, editors and animators. We have a senior production manager who oversees the entire production from a project management standpoint. She also field produces. And she has a production coordinator who works with her in tandem to keep all of the videos across all of the channels moving forward. We do not miss our deadlines. We do not publish late. We have, you know, it's like everything
video
happens
is
when it's
scheduled
supposed
out
to happen.
For the next 6 months.
Right now.
And all of my time, all of my writing time is scheduled out until probably the end of January.
Almost just like audibly gasped, but every video for the next 6 months?
Yeah.
Across all channels.
And every deadline, deadline is already articulated.
Search party,
and my time is literally articulated and accounted for.
Do
in
you
blocks.
Like that?
I like it because it is, I like it for this chapter of my life in the sense that I am so prolific if I feel like I don't have a choice. I'm very
if
ADD.
If you're in the stable.
If I'm in the stable,
he
there
almost
we go.
Chooses it.
Or the racetrack.
Too. Like I'll say like we could have extra time, but you do.
I choose to
like
not know that there's flexibility. So I look at my calendar that has been designed for months and I say for the next 6 hours, I have to finish this script or I have to get this thing done or whatever. And my whole week is built off of those blocks. And they are down to the minute, and they are like a race every day, and that's how
you are like a wild stallion that's been domesticated.
Yes, I've been domesticated.
How many meetings do you have to be in, if any?
Zero. As few as possible. Like meetings to me are
only in the afternoon.
I will take them only in the afternoon after writing blocks, and as few as possible. They're usually high level business meetings where I want to sit in.
Yeah.
Or they are production kickoffs where I'm like transferring the script after I finish the script, transferring that to somebody.
It's like 3 days a week for me are back to back. Like I'll have
but no
meetings in the day,
my communication
10.
Is all asynchronous. So I'm sending looms and Slack videos and voice notes.
How do you maintain?
Can we you just said you send voice notes, which is a character trait of the Harris family.
I am a voice note obsessed person. This is my fault.
So I am delighted by a 60-second voice note.
Okay.
Delighted.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a couldn't weakness of yours.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A 5 minute, 17 second voice note, which is what I got from Iz. The audience can let us know if you guys agree, but there is a cutoff.
Yeah.
5 minutes is way beyond the cutoff for a voice note.
I was
note.
On my way home from, or maybe I was heading into a doctor's appointment, but I had a moment and I was like, I'm going to tell him what I think. I do agree with you that it should be shorter.
Dude,
I am never going to call you.
Who's going to find time to coordinate a call?
No, don't coordinate the call. Just call me.
I just think for every
minute,
for every minute you add to the voice note, I just think your expectation of when you'll get a response has to be delayed at least,
and fair.
At least another couple of days.
What you'll learn about me is I never expect to hear back, and you may also never hear back. So, and that's really what it is to be my friend.
Like personal texting.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
But we would, that's crazy. You and I would never talk.
But we'd still love each other. And that's like, really most of my friendship.
And that's what's happened since you hung out in Samsung.
And I don't take any of it personally.
No,
and that's
same.
Exactly.
The funny thing about, I think, our relationship is like, Johnny, you and I were on the phone the other day and I like enjoyed it so much. And Johnny wanted off the phone so bad by the end. And I was like, stay for a little bit.
He loves calls, to end the conversation.
Media, Johnny. Make me so anxious because I'm always like, I'm cutting into a block. Right
sure.
Now. Like fair. My blocks are sacred.
Understood.
And so I reduce meetings by sending 5 minute voice notes because I'm like, in 5 minutes, I can get done. I can communicate what needs to be
done.
No,
we're not sending voice notes. We're sending looms or Marco Polos, but it is the way that he communicates mostly with the team. We also have in-person team members. Our team is also made up of reporters who are in charge of fact checking, but they're also story producing on videos. And to answer your question, they are pitching. Mm. But what it looks like when we have a story day, it is the two of us and we're mostly going to be on our feet. And we're going to have a huge piece of paper that is sprawled out across a huge table.
That's cool.
And we are going to have markers and we're going to be arguing and debating.
And drawing thumbnails.
All day.
Drawing out the thumbnails.
This
is a new process that Izzy implemented
smart.
Maybe 6 months ago. And it has been revolutionary. Mm-hmm. It's like gone from the stallion's gut to
which is a wonderful place. But I also, it's because I believe
I need your team to animate.
Make that happen.
On a stallion.
I can make that happen. I believe that the best stories, I really feel this strongly. Like if you're going to convince me that you should get 4 million people to sit down for 30 minutes of their time, precious time, to watch a thing, then you sure as hell should be able to defend that story. And that doesn't mean like that it's not gonna happen again, like he has veto power, but when he can, that's a
good story. It's a really good exercise.
It's a good story because he cares enough to do it.
This is a weird thing that I've learned about human psychology, which is if you're creating for 100,000 people, the gut really works. It's like, I'm going to make something and like 100,000 people are going to be interested in this or whatever. If you are creating and you have to reach 2 to 4 million people every time, which kind of we have to for like the business to work. They have to be home runs every single time.
Not at every time, but again, he tells himself certain things.
No, that's good. Don't tell him anything different.
They kind of do.
In order for the brands to come back and pay the rates that they do, so we can pay payroll, they have to be home runs every single time.
You have 25 people on payroll.
Yeah. The overhead is not cheap.
Like, can't be volatile.
So they can't be like, I'm doing a video on something.
No, they can't.
So,
Yeah.
Since we got to the point where the home run has to be pretty consistent, it has been very useful to not have it just be like, I'm interested in this esoteric thing and I'm going to make it interesting with animation. Is he coming in and being like, but defend it. Why is this interesting? Has been a really good exercise for me to appeal to a much bigger audience.
Which he was very resistant to.
Super resistant.
First.
Still kind of am.
I'm
trying really honestly, hard, but boy, it is not easy
this
for
is,
me.
This like, is,
but
I feel
it's
I
also
actually,
your wife that you have to defend it to, which
I will stop and say, yeah. I made a brand off of trolling Johnny and like I love.
What do you mean you made a brand off of trolling?
Like a big part of my channel was just trolling Johnny. Like
I love to troll him. You have like a fake account.
Oh, I have a separate brand.
Johnny.
Yeah. As the CEO of the company, yeah. I also have a brand where I just shit on him.
And the brand deals over there are great.
They're incredible. Yeah.
Actually, no,
but they're not for him.
By the way, those videos do pop.
Some of them are good critiques, but I will say he is, and you've grown so much in this way. You're my very favorite creative collaborator. He's an incredible creative collaborator. It is a blast. Those moments, like, we love nothing more. We had a date the other night. We had like candles and pizza and like we had like
thumbnails.
Four different meals and we just drew thumbnails. No, but we were sitting there and we just debated for an hour on various subjects vigorously.
Including whether or not Taylor Swift has an objectively good voice.
I was hoping you wouldn't say that.
And where she ranks.
We don't have to have
Sabrina
this conversation.
I'm going to cut you guys out.
We're not
right
even going to say anything.
I'm not going to join this because I have too much to say.
No, and no one should.
We've done this.
Once the camera's cut, we'll start
that one up. Everyone needs to stop this conversation right now. The whole point was, because we need to be careful. Here's the thing. He's an incredible creative collaborator. You've come a really long way
in collaborating
with being able to share that process and see the merit of someone else in that process. But now when we're both in on an idea, it very often is our most successful video.
Yeah.
And that's exciting. And then it kind of proves the concept for like, okay, look at what we just did and we developed together. We could do it again and again and again. What leads up to that when you ask if it's just us is that our reporters and team members, everyone's welcome to pitch. We went through all sorts of pitching mechanisms and made them way too complicated. And now I just say one sentence pitch. That's all I need. If you want to do more, you go right ahead.
That's not fully true. They do flesh out a couple
points. It's a little
bit more. There's a visual.
But it's really hinged on, can you sell it?
Can you really boil it down? And that forces the pitch to actually be something.
And technically they're asked to do one sentence, but they almost always give us more.
I enjoyed the kind of sexiness of the one-line pitch.
Yeah.
So I'm going to forget what Johnny just said.
But that is, it is what we assign them and it is what they're supposed to do, but they are overachievers and I appreciate that about them. And they turn something over that's like a little bit more.
Yes.
But can you convince me? And like the least words possible that this is interesting.
Literally going to voice note the hell out of you with our ideas for our videos.
Man.
Because I need your feedback.
But make it 4 minutes long.
Izzy's really good.
Because otherwise I won't listen.
No, I know. I know. Yeah. Izzy's feedback. I respect Izzy's feedback deeply.
And she'll
like once I got ChatGPT to summarize your voice note.
Which
I did do. I really respected it.
Yeah. You know, it was even better live.
I listened to it like a podcast. I put it on in my car.
No, okay, I'll tell you
I'll put music in the background, sound effects.
Yeah.
I can do better.
Like, I'm going to edit it up a little bit. Wild Stallion.
Michael Barbaro.
Yeah.
I will say that for the most part, our team's pitches have not gotten through historically. And I think that that's been pretty frustrating for them and frustrating for us, you know, but more frustrating for them. And this,
there is a, there at the end of the day, and this is, I don't know if this is a strength or a weakness.
It's a strength.
At the end of the day, there is a final filter, which is, I have to be excited about it. And she can make me excited about something, but if it doesn't click for me, it does not get made, even if it's an objectively good idea. And like, that is frustrating.
Give me the few things that make it click. Just like a couple things.
We actually wrote these down.
It's if I can see, like, I have a very visual, kind of weirdly visual, where like things that shouldn't be visual are visual for me. And
he has synesthesia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In addition to all sorts of other weird, quirky things.
Everybody knew what that was except for me in this room.
Synesthesia.
He, like, to words sees colors words and numbers.
A lot of musicians talk about
it.
If a
story comes in and intellectually it makes sense. So like the intellectual filter, I'll be like, oh yeah, that causal mechanism makes sense. This equals this. But then I need to be able to see something sexy. I need to be able to see an intro or a data viz or even a color scheme that makes me like see it in After Effects, like see it in the editor and like feel, and like I start to see the edit kind of.
Yeah, and that moment's apparent once it
if I can
hits
get a little figment of just that, then I'm like, I can see this thing through to the very end. I will sit through 4 or 5 days of scripting because I'm so stoked on this and I'll make it great.
Can you give us an example of like in a video where you kind of had one of those initial visualizations or feelings?
So we were in Scotland with our children road tripping around, and the Washington Post published this like bombshell investigation, like this investigative report about Trump and Egypt and the 2016 campaign. It was like this sort of wonky investation. We read that together one evening.
We listened. It was 30 minutes long.
We listened to the AI version of it. As I was listening, I could see exactly like the dark color scheme of the map. I could see the thin lines connecting. I could see the money icons. And I was like, done. Like, yes. Yeah. And it's like, and then we talked about it. We're like, we can make it this. And then we, you know, like the, we have to actually make it into a green lighty type thing. But if I can see that,
well, that then it just sent through.
It's like a fire is starting to actually catch. Mm-hmm. And I need some version of that for me to feel good about a story. I'll get through a story and sort of, if I don't feel that, but it's way harder and it's way less pleasant. And it doesn't, at the end of the day, it doesn't have the same kind of.
Is that a DNA from Vox?
To the audience.
Because like Cleo says the same thing, right? Of like a key visual.
So Cleo, the key visual is a little different. Key visuals are more of an intellectual exercise where if there is a visual that anchors it, where it's like with this visual, we can explain the story. That is a strong marker for like, we should do this.
We could be more disciplined in that.
Yeah. And I used to do that way more with my story pitches. What I'm referring to is way more subjective and way more of like a feeling. It's like a weird, like sort of inspirational kind of feeling that I do get. I get it. Like I was just on the airplane writing a story about AI war. And I was just trying to like get that kind of like excitement, the art of it. Because I want these stories to be artful. I don't want them to just be information. I want people to feel something when they watch them. And that feeling starts with that little kind of spark early on. So like that is the final filter for me for a story that I know is going
to
be good.
But again, that's a strength. Like I think it would be inauthentic to the audience for Johnny to push forward stories that he's not excited about unless we feel for some other reason we need to urgently cover them.
Like
you
Trump
know?
And Kamala, honestly.
There are other reasons programmatic, to cover
like
things.
We should do this because it makes sense. We rarely do that.
But they're there for him and for the way that he explains the world and sees the world and what he's curious about. So it should be something that we're filtering through.
Like right now, Finland. Finland is all I can think about. I've been talking about Finland because I feel the spirit on Finland. Don't you? No, see, can't you feel that?
I'm sorry.
It's all he's like, thinking about right now.
I can see the shots of like some base in northern Finland right now. And I'm going to go there and make a fucking amazing piece because I can see it. And I don't know what the story is going to be about. Because like I'll figure that out.
And that's where something gets greenlit. Like that is, there are still moments where that is just greenlit. Because it just makes sense to me.
How do you, though, make sure and stress test that it's not something that's going to get 100,000 views and that it's
story edit at some point. So like, for instance...
But we know, like, I know that it's going to get 2.5 million views.
Finland will get 2.5 million views.
So what's another example? Because you were saying, like, there are times where you come in and you're like, okay, I know you like that idea and you're excited, but I'm going to defend it to make sure that it really...
Totally.
He just made a video in Georgia and I was concerned about it. I was concerned about... I didn't fully grasp the story that he was going to tell. He hadn't really... explained it very well, which is a red flag to me because it's like, okay, well, you clearly don't understand this yet, which sometimes is a strength for a field story. But I was concerned. And time, you know, Finland's easy because Finland just performs. People are fascinated by Finland.
Every,
you know,
like,
I don't like, I am not on this. I am not on Finland.
I don't know if Finland performs.
It performs.
I think I've convinced you. I think you've contagion has been caught. She's like, Finland's fucking amazing.
So, but I.
Well, of course, Finland is a 1 out of 10.
Well, of course, Finland's great. So we.
Samir's like, what are they talking about?
What you guys are talking about?
Okay, I'm done with Finland.
Okay, moving on.
I was mad about this video. I was mad that he was pushing it. We had just kind of come off of some Russia-focused videos, and this was going to be about Russia. And we were seeing from our audience real Russia fatigue. And that is a real thing in news cycles. And there were other things more... not necessarily more urgently going on, but going on. And I really felt like we need to pivot. And I'm not sure that this has it. And he didn't convince me that it was visual. And we agreed to disagree. And he flew out like a week later. And I was very suspicious of this story. Once you come back, and this has changed, if we're, you know, you come back a little bit more humbly too, where you're
totally.
Like, I'm just not sure I'm going to shape this thing.
Yeah.
You know,
the stallion has been domesticated.
Yes. Yeah. It's in the stable. But that process is going to be us sitting probably in Premiere and we're workshopping what the assembly is of that and how it's going to work and what is the hook and I'm looking at the script and I'm story editing that. Yeah. And it's not to say I go in there and I make magic. He makes magic, but I come in with what we call on our team fresh brain, and fresh brain cannot be underestimated. When you're steeped in a story, when it's everything that you know and you've been thinking about, you no longer know, or it's very unlikely that you do know, what is the most interesting part.
Yeah,
it's why you talk to people about something and like experts, they're terrible. Experts are terrible about talking about what they know, you know? And so you need someone with fresh brain who's like, actually, the most interesting part that struck me is this. And that's a collaborative process.
A huge
sometimes
thing.
We used to get in bigger, you know, that was one like we now know how to kind of scuffle together and be like, whatever, we're gonna make the thing and I'm gonna really show up to make it great. And I will never not, you know, like I'm all in on whatever we're gonna make. Because I'm really invested in the channel and New Press, like I really, really, really believe in the mission and the impact that we can have. That's not bullshit. I really do. So that's why I show up. We used to get in like pretty big fights when this was like last year.
Yeah.
When we'd be like a month into a story or we're 6 months into a story or we're near publishing a story. And I would just turn to him and I'd be like, you hate this story. I know you hate this story. It is like pulling teeth, getting you to go through this story. So why did you say yes? Why did you greenlight it? Why did you let someone put this forward? And that's on you, to be clear. It's not on the researcher, or the story producer. That is on you. And you were overwhelmed and stretched.
When we were publishing, when you started seeing me every week, that was at a time when we were scaling me. And it turned into a lot of that like final filter thing. I was like, whatever, like, I'm now being humble and I started to humble myself too much.
Too much.
And the wild stallion was suddenly just like a pony.
I actually had to say like, we're going to stop with that.
No, I'm going to keep going with this because it actually
it's actually
a really good metaphor. I became-
There's fear because this could go so far and we really don't know where this metaphor
You're saying the stallion thing.
I'm currently-
It could follow me home.
I'm with
this is a new metaphor that we're gonna hit. So anyway,
it's all visual for me.
I did start to like
it's a 1 out of 10.
I did start to it's a good metaphor. I did start to green light stuff that I didn't actually feel the spirit on. And
it was later on once that became painful. And it was later on,
like, this is horrible. So we've reached this really nice collaboration where, like, Izzy really understands what I'm trying to do. She builds that up. I'm humble enough, but yeah. I also, like,
but that hold could my have, ground. That could have come off as me being critical. I wasn't being critical. It was like an aha moment. And I had to fight for him, you know, as his partner more than his business partner. At that point, I wasn't really even thinking and optimizing the performance as much. Now it's all I think about, but then it wasn't. And I really was like, why are you doing this to yourself? You're gonna ruin it. Cause I knew what that felt like. You keep making something that you hate, you're not gonna It'll be able to sustain you. It. Yeah. Because you're not just doing this as like a technician, you're doing it as an artist. And that is pulled from somewhere inside of you. It's like Elizabeth Gilbert, Big Magic, you know? It's like, that is it's a finite, you know, resource and it needs resupplied. And so I actually pulled him aside and it was two things. It was, please stop doing this. It was three things. Please stop doing this because it makes my job so much harder. I'm so tired of pulling you through stories that you don't want to do. I'm so tired of trying to get you to leave notes on stuff that you are over, you know? It was also, don't do this because it's going to hurt something that you really love doing. He really loves making videos, you know?
I do.
And then the third was, I need you to be a little bit more of a diva. I need you to throw your elbows around. I need
that's
you.
That's coming across.
Just the stallion is back. Yeah. It's back. Yeah. You know, but I really was like, I need you to walk into these rooms and say, no, we're not telling that story.
Yeah.
Because I don't find it interesting. We're not telling that story because I don't know if it's good.
I will do that, but I can't pump out 4 videos a month. I can't
I was like, too bad.
No. And so this year was actually the first year that this is fairly new. Like this is the first year that we went down to like 2 videos. So we know we could do more.
2.5
on average.
The hell does that mean?
Two.
So never mind. Spread out over the year. Sorry. I was like, just to be fair to his efforts.
It's called the mean?
Yeah. What's
yeah.
So, and that gave me this space to actually feel the spirit in every
story. That's not a math show. So
2.5.
Yeah, we're not math.
2.5. What do you mean?
Yeah. I was like shorts?
Yeah, that's the process.
You guys are now, you know, like scaling beyond Johnny, right? Search Party is a channel you guys launched that when I first saw that, I was kind of wary. I mean, I didn't know much about where the org had gone. Like, I didn't know you had 25 employees. Mm-hmm. So I looked at that and I was like, yeah, sure. And then now, as I'm talking to you more, I'd love for you guys to just pitch New Press, what it is, what it's going to become. Like, what are you doing now? Where does, you know, this org, this DNA that you've created, which I really respect, because everything you're saying is problems that we face and problems that a lot of creatives face.
I think we may set up a call with you.
Yeah.
To just, I would love that. Actually 100% serious to run through.
Like, collaboration.
The more I can chat with you guys, the better.
Yeah. Is incredibly challenging. Scaling taste is probably the hardest thing. Being bottlenecked by taste is incredibly challenging. So all the above. And then also going like creativity and performance, like you're half programming executive, half filmmaker, right? You have to operate as both as a creator.
Right.
And actually you kind of have to operate more as a programming executive than a filmmaker.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It's 80-20 probably.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So all of that, you know, I look at what you're doing and I'm like, you guys have found incredible success.
Yeah.
You could just keep doing this.
Yeah.
You can probably make generational wealth doing it.
Yeah.
Why do more?
So great question. And let me explain first what it is we're building, because it might help answer some of the questions and like those pitfalls you mentioned that get really tricky. We are building a new news media entity called New Press. And that is going to be the umbrella company that is over 5 to 8 excellent creator-led independent journalism channels. And they're all lovely. And I'm lucky, truly, to work with each of them. So it will be those channels, and those creators will have very small teams that creatively they manage, but operationally and project management-wise, they do not. We have a full operation. Go ahead.
Do they get a salary, or are they partnered in the channel?
It's a great question. We have full ownership of the channel. They get a salary and benefits. And then they get a generous rev share over time as the channel scales. And they are all very, very happy with the deal, and we feel with the perspective of creators that it's a good deal, given the fact that they will not have to, one, take the risk of launching their own business. But that is kind of, I don't know if that's like the sell really, because they'd be successful. And I tell them this on the call, they'd be successful. They'd make something huge. Look at Clio, you know? But they really don't want to run a business. They really, really don't. And so what I make sure is the case is that they are not worrying about brand deals. They are not worrying about agencies. They are not worrying about syndication. They are not worrying about publishing. They are not worrying about upload timelines. Taxes, they have a full project management
and
team.
Thumbnails,
they have thumbnail designers at their disposal. I do all hiring. I do all firing. I do all performance reviews. Everything is handled. So they, which this is what they approached us about wanting to do, they get to still sit down and just make the thing. And it doesn't mean it's not draining creatively. It is. You can't really escape the fact that they're always going to be having to come up with ideas, like you said. Mm-hmm. But they're not doing all of the rest. And if we're doing our job really well, they're not really thinking about it too much either. The other sell is, hopefully we can make something that is bigger and more impactful together. We're story editing one another. We've learned so much. Each of the people that's come on board and are coming on board are very passionate about the idea of growing something as a group, as a cohort, and having that camaraderie and that trust and someone to kind of like fall back on and look to and pitch to and brainstorm with. And when you spend time doing it on your own, you realize how hard it is to not have that, you know, and all of them are coming from entities where they have had that. So that is the structure. That's the thing that we're growing. Do you have?
It's just very cool to see you embody this like badass media mogul, you know?
Yeah. Thank you.
It's just really cool. Like, I've known you for a long time and
you
just feel very natural in this.
I really believe it. I think it's fun because I really, really believe in it. I really do.
I can feel that.
And like, I've done other things and tried other things. We all have that. Like, it just didn't fully click. Like, I believe something needs to change. I don't think we're going to be the only solve. I really pray to the God that I don't believe in that we are not. Like, I really, really hope that we're not. But I think we can be one part of the solve. And a pretty impactful one if we reach the audiences that I think we're capable of reaching. And so that gets us a little bit more to like, what is the mission? Like, what is it that makes a new pressed independent, like creator-led channel, right? And that's a myriad of things. I've talked a lot about accessibility because I'm deeply, deeply passionate about it. Majority of Americans do not read past a sixth grade level. That is a real fact, and it's a real problem. And if we don't acknowledge it, we're leaving so many people behind in what is already an information vortex, you know? Like, it is a tornado out there. Mm-hmm. And so I really, first and foremost, want our videos to be accessible to anyone and everyone who wants to learn about the world. What does that, like, mean, you know? It means using plainer language, not being jargony and wonky because it feels good, not getting caught up in what's really easy to get caught up in, which is speaking to your peers and to experts.
But still having to be rigorous, I think.
And it doesn't sacrifice rigor. That's another pillar. These videos are deeply rigorous and deeply researched and deeply fact-checked. Now, we did get called out at one point for that, and they've always been fact-checked, but we did not have the level of interventions that we have now. So they're rigorous, they're visual, they're accessible.
And they are, they're creator-led. I think that the other thing that New Press allows us to do, and the thing I'm excited about, is like, right now, payroll relies on home runs from the Johnny Harris
channel. The stakes are high for your channel.
The stakes are high for one channel that is bottlenecked around one stallion.
So long as you talk about Finland, you're good.
Yeah, yeah. Which is actually is the next right 6 months. The videos is just Finland.
It's just Finland
part 1 through 12.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that would go.
We may even launch a new press channel.
Yeah, just for Finland.
Yeah. So new press is strictly about Finland.
Oh, okay.
I actually should have just said that.
It's making Finland accessible to everyone
So the poke around this episode, you're gonna get so lost in the
oh boy, it's so true. This is not one you can skip around on.
Seriously, flip that.
No, if you watch the whole thing, you'll be found.
You'll be found.
Yeah.
There's a lot of pressure in that. And there's a lot of key man risk. There's a lot of like bottlenecking around like Johnny write the script. And that isn't actually a good creative energy for the company. It's exciting for me. It's exciting for us as we make these like big bangers. But at some point,
somebody's been hanging out with Mark Rober.
Yeah, bangers. Gotta hit those bangers.
When did that happen?
That's actually very
juicy
true.
Nuggets
and banger videos. Juicy nuggets and bangers.
Juicy nuggets.
But I when I'm 45 years old, I hope that we have a media company. I still want to be making videos. But I hope that the pressure is distributed across a larger set of creators and sort of verticals so that I can start to exercise my creativity in a different way. Right now, my creativity is exercised because I have these highly pressurized, prolific blocks of writing and a beautiful organization that like makes it all happen and a creative collaborator and producer that helps bring it to life. I don't know if when I'm 45, I want to be doing that. I don't know if when I'm 45, I want to have my next 6 months planned out to the minute.
Yeah, or at that volume.
And you know? I don't know if I want to be publishing two and a half times a month on average for a year. I think what the newspaper had was that it did have the front page. It did have the crossword. That kind of is what people bought it for. Most people buy it for the entertainment and the sensational thing. But then in between, in the middle of these pages, there is deep dive investigations, the spotlight section that's doing really important journalism. The people aren't paying for that. They're not buying this for that. But because they're buying it for the front page and the crossword, the journalist can do this the six-month investigation. I want to be able to do the six-month investigation. That doesn't really make sense financially, but because we have a big organization, I can do that. And it's floated by the fact that we're all doing this. So I think what new press allows us to do is replicate the incentives of old media, which had some really good things, but do it in this sort of creator-led new media way. And to distribute some of that risk and also pool together creative talent. Like, it's a really exciting prospect for me. I could never build it. I would never want to build it. If it were me without Iz, I would just make videos all the time for the rest of my life.
Stallion in the wild.
Mm-hmm. And it would be wild and chaotic and crazy, but it would work. And it would be a lot
more about Doritos.
And there would be weird shit and moss. And there would be moss and there'd be Doritos and a lot of Finland. And it would be fun.
So much Finland.
And yet her role in all of this coming over and building this thing has afforded us like another opportunity, a different vision that I'm really excited about.
How do you not become Vox? How do you not fall to the same fate?
I do. I've been talking about this. This is actually, I am not even kidding. Like both Pillow Talk and like the first thing I started talking about.
We should clarify for the audience though, that like Vox, like what I just said, do you agree with that? Of that, like, you know, there was at one point where Vox was the greatest video journalism I had ever seen in my life.
Yes. I think Vox was transformative for video journalism. And
absolutely.
And also their brand has become a little bit more diluted and is objectively performing
because
less well. In
my
the
opinion from
years.
The outside looking in is that any media company, when you get big, you face revenue pressures that are at odds with creativity.
Yeah. Vox.
That is one theory.
BuzzFeed, Vox.
But the Vox story is different and it's a different cautionary tale for us.
So let me say the first thing, and I'm not saying this like truly out of any pressure. It's something I've been thinking a lot. It's the same thing like what I said about news media and like how it has a place. I used to just be like, fuck it. We're done with it. We don't need like news anchors and we don't need breaking news. We do. We need some version of it and someone has to do it. And like you said, it's synergetic. separately, Vox Video, which is really where we were most involved with the brand.
I mean, that's where I got my start.
Like, yeah, we would not be where we are without it. And also, it has so dramatically shaped what we do. They came up with the craft that we have now built our, you know, our entire company on. We ask ourselves often, how do we protect ourselves from that risk of becoming so big and so corporate that your audience feels distant and disconnected from what you're making?
And your talent leaves.
Your talent leaves. Mm-hmm. So that's the really first scary. Solve was, how do we create a deal that gets talent to want to stay? Turns out you pay them for the work that they're doing. You pay them some part, at least, of what they are bringing into the company.
Right.
And that was a big play, a big at Vox, area.
They were bringing nothing. That like when I was at Vox doing Borders and I was the most popular show, I was getting paid a good salary, but Vox was not monetizing that show. It would get 100 million views per season. And they were not monetizing that.
And there
in
was
any
no talent
way.
Bonus.
So I was not getting paid for that. And there was no plan to say, Johnny or Cleo or whoever is a, someone who wants to build a sort of brand here, we're going to give you a path. Mm-hmm. They tried, but it was never a priority. And so the cautionary tale for us is there's all kinds of like company culture stuff and all these things that like we want to preserve because Vox had that. But the cautionary tale is, if you want people to stick around and grow this thing and put them above the brand, that is why New Press is going to be something that no one really knows. Us industry folks will talk about it. But like, it's going to be Search Party and it's going to be Tunnel Vision. It's going to be Johnny Harris. That's
and you may not even know.
And you may not know that they're totally connected. Fan. Because we think that the creators will stick around if they are given freedom and compensated. And so that is our antidote.
And we think the audience will feel most connected if it's more about the creator than the brand itself. So those are a couple things that we're trying to improve. But the corporate question is one that keeps me up at night. How do we keep it scrappy? I think a big mistake that these companies made I think two big mistakes. And I don't know that we won't make them.
Yeah.
I hope we won't. But I'd be naive to say it's totally avoidable. Because I'm sure if I sat down with those people, they'd say, you know what? I had the same exact fears and I tried really hard. And it just turns out it's really, really hard once you reach a certain size to retain that quality.
What are the two things? I'm like,
let me set you up. So the two things are...
I'm like, you're giving me the other side of the story of what they're saying.
Separation of creative and operations.
Yeah.
They cannot overlap.
And revenue.
And
on
revenue.
The operational side.
Yes.
Although those are deeply intertwined.
They're deeply
revenue
intertwined,
and creative are
but
deeply intertwined.
My team does not need to know that something, and I'm talking about my team of hosts and creators, they don't need to know that something underperformed one time. They don't need to know that on this video, their conversion levels were this bit below. They do not need to know that. It does not matter. It's okay. We're in it for the long term, like the long haul, right? And there's other ways to shape it because I know how to bridge both. I can shape it on the creative without shaping it using my operations skills, right? Or my revenue knowledge. Those two have to remain separate. When I hire someone on the operations side, I have a very clear conversation that they will not touch creative. They will not pitch stories. They will not shape stories. They will not talk about what the color should look like or what the map should look like. They won't talk about how the thumbnail should look like. They can talk about it with their friends. They could even talk about it with their colleagues, though I'd prefer they don't.
Don't you dare bring up Finland.
Because the creative team is in charge of that. Do not talk about Finland. Don't say that word here.
Nope.
Most people...
That's Johnny's thing. Yeah.
And what that does is it's not like at that point I'm hiring someone who's like, I have creative aspirations, but sure, I'll be over here. It's not punitive.
Yeah.
It's that I am making sure I find the person who's like, I love this and I love supporting that through this and I'm happy to stay over there. That's essential. The other thing that I think is really, really important to be wary of is that you have to keep the processes scrappy. You have to be wary of just increasing overhead for overhead's sake.
Yeah.
The hires have to be really strategic. They have to, one, amount to more volume for the most part so that they're not just a weight mm-hmm. on the system. And there's some fun weights to hire, but they just create pressure to mm-hmm. make more. So you have to be really strategic and go like, am I going to get what we need out of this to support this creator? If the answer is no, if it's not going to make their life easier and them better at doing what they do best, or it's not going to make the operation side more strong and scale what they're doing to get more bang for their buck with that effort, it has to be a no. It has to be a no for us. We also have to be wary of growing too big. I don't want a huge company. Yeah. I don't have aspirations for that. I want something. I never want to grow in a way, and I'm not saying that those other places did this because I don't think they did. I don't think that's what happened. I don't want to grow in a way that we optimize for speed and sacrifice quality. I want quality to always be our number one, and quality in the videos, quality in the communication, quality in the visuals. Like, that has to be our North Star. I think the day we shift on that or we compromise on that, it's just, it's a ticking time bomb at that point.
We think about this often.
You have to develop a very clear-cut understanding of what success looks like and how much money you want.
Yeah.
Like, honestly.
And we don't know, like, we're at this point where we're really getting our heads around New Press, the vision. We haven't put scale. We've basically said, like, 5 to 8 channels. Mm-hmm. But in terms of, like, in the weeds, what that looks like, I think there's going to be momentum towards, like, well, if it's 8, why don't we do 10? You know, like, we're going to have to mm-hmm. really be disciplined about putting the brakes on, because it will be very hard to go back in time.
But I think, again, if that North Star is the North Star, like, if the creative quality is the North Star, then the answer to why not 10 is likely because launching that many channels sacrifices quality.
Revenue starts, well, that's the thing. And
Izzy is really good at scaling.
At some point, you have to be willing to...
Izzy is amazing at scaling. She's been able to scale and keep quality well beyond what I thought was possible. And so it's like, I think we're going to get really good at this because of what she's built. I'm worried that there will be that momentum. And so we have talked about, even today, on the way on the Uber mm-hmm. over here, I was saying, like, I want to make sure that the momentum of making stuff and the money that comes in doesn't become so much that, like, we don't know when to push the brakes and have me step back and have a season of making stuff that takes longer. That's going to require some planning and some really firm boundaries.
Yeah. And it's also not an overnight skill.
And real leadership.
Yeah. And we had a situation this week where we secured almost all of our sponsors for next year, which I've never done at this point in the year. It was very exciting. And then more. And it was, we knew how many videos we were making.
How many videos?
3 per month on average.
2.5-ish.
36 videos.
36
next year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there's ways and that works.
On the Johnny Harris channel.
On the Johnny Harris channel.
For New Press across the board, how many videos do you think you guys published this year?
24 on Search Party. So, and then the other channel will be making likely a weekly show.
100 videos.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, if it's a weekly show, then
Tunnel Vision will be making every month.
Scare the shit.
So between 100 and 150 that you know are going to, and all of them are
sponsored.
And then
a billion shorts. Yeah. And they're all going to be sponsored. Yeah.
Roughly. Not the shorts, though.
No, the shorts won't be sponsored, but all the VOD will be.
Every single long form VOD is sponsored.
Yes.
I don't let something go live unless it's not sponsored. 100% fill
rate, this lady over here.
I'll take the job.
Yeah.
Wow. I'll come work for you.
And so, yes, that is the plan, but they were pushing us. You know, they weren't pushing us. I don't understand.
I'm telling you, media mogul in our industry.
Yeah. But seriously.
But hopefully, itty bitty one. But like, so I did say that they were pushing us.
We're the same height. Yeah.
What do you mean? Just like in scale. I don't want to be.
Was that a microaggression?
Yeah. Were you calling me itty bitty?
I just need to be able to stay home a lot. That's all I'm saying. But yes. No. So
it was right back to her. Like, I just need to be an introvert.
I just.
Oh, man.
We weren't getting pressure. It felt like pressure because it's money. My agent, Mark, is the best human on the planet and would never pressure me to take a single thing ever, or you.
Yeah.
But more came through. And the reason I say this is because I think it's it's another muscle that if you're not practicing now, you're fucked.
Saying no.
And we said no.
I'm bad at that.
We not only said no, we said no. And also go back to those brands and make them flex on this and this and this, because we're not even going to, I'm not making our hosts make videos quicker or publish on a different month than they want to. Like, this is going to be how this is.
This is the first time I'm hearing about this. I'm like, this is fucking awesome. And luckily,
I haven't.
Wait, we have sponsors?
I was like, this company is so cool.
Yeah. Can I work there? Yeah. Do you by chance need a stallion? Boy, do we. And so, you know, to our agency and team's credit, they went and made that happen because they're very good at doing that. But I think that it's similar to, like, you know, we watch people retire and they're lost and then they just kind of go back to work because they just never figured out how to love something and feel like self-worth out of something outside. Hard to do.
Very hard to do.
I got a lot of fulfillment out of this thing, you know? But you have to be practicing those things as you go and practicing saying no and practicing saying it's enough. And it is enough. Like, let's be real. At that point, at we'll six fine. Channels, it's enough. And if I do it right, it's like really good. And that's like, that's, I mean, I want the money, but that's also like, that's way better. It's really good. And hopefully it's good for the world. You know, like hopefully I watch our son, Henry, who's autistic and he's almost 12, which is crazy.
That's crazy.
And terrifying. Wow. And he watches our videos, both as they're being like,
he watches
the fine cuts.
He's like, is the Pentagon budget one ready yet, Dad?
And then he knows Publish Day.
I'll let you watch the fine.
He knows Publish Day. He tracks it because we've said like it will publish.
Interesting.
And then he comes and he's like, I heard there was a new search party video on NATO, you know?
Wow.
And he's like, can I watch it? And he watches them over and over and over again. And sometimes we're on a plane and I'm like, people are going to think we're narcissists because he just keeps watching like Johnny for, you know, 6 hours. But when I see that, like, this is my son who struggles to read and to write. You know, he's a brilliant, one of the most brilliant minds. And this is not hyperbolic. He's one of the most brilliant minds I have ever come across in my entire life. And I've spoken to some brilliant people. This kid understands like theoretical mathematics on a level that you and I and him will never. But reading and writing is really challenging for his specific brain and the way that it works. And when I see him light up and understand geopolitics and economics and climate and all of these different things that I'd never dreamt of understanding in my lifetime, let alone at 12, that is like the fuel that gets me going. That is the thing that I'm like, there are so many Henrys out there. They may not be on the autism spectrum. They may not even have a disability, but they feel disenfranchised, or they feel like they fell through the cracks, or they feel frustrated with how their brain learns. They feel frustrated with how information is presented. And we can be the place that gets like that light to turn on where it's like, oh, one, it's okay to not know something. And two, isn't it so fun to learn it?
Yeah.
And that's like, I want to do that more and more and
more.
That's the motivator. But only to six channels.
On this subject of like scaling a creative organization, like what you guys are doing with New Press is like something that a lot of creators won't get to. When you first came in with Johnny, like any creator who's trying to build a team around themselves, similar to like when I listened to Bezos on Lex Fridman, I was really amazed at some of his little points about organization, about like time to decision, like decision making as a metric in an organization. Like he had frameworks about, you know, building a team that I just hadn't heard and really turned a light switch in my head. I think a lot of creators who are trying to solve like hiring or building a creative organization would appreciate, you know, some knowledge of even like three things that you would say are critical that you've learned in building a creative organization.
Mm. Okay. So, okay. This is stealing one from Cleo, who is one of my best friends, her husband, who is also one of my best friends. But he always says that bias towards action should be number one. And that is something that we have in spades, Johnny and I. We have no patience to do things the right way or the long way or the, you know, complicated way. It gets us in trouble. It really does. And it's actually a problem. But for the most part in business, it serves us well. So bias towards action. You make decisions quick. You do things fast. You break things.
And you don't talk about it. You don't get the feel good of talking about a problem or presenting the reasons it can't happen. You get the feel good by solving the problem of what is the first step towards.
Yeah, I actually don't even want to hear about the problem until you've taken some steps. Yeah, multiple steps.
Yeah.
And you are sure you cannot solve that problem unless that problem is urgent and you need to talk to me. So bias towards action. The other is to be kind. And I know that that sounds like, oh, how sweet, but it actually is a bit self-serving. Be kind to other people. It took me a while to learn that. I'm kind in my life, but when business starts to happen, it gets harder. You know, you're on deadlines and there's a lot of pressure and you're moving quickly and you're frustrated. And you only have about 5 minutes to express that frustration before you have to move on to the next fire that needs to be put out, right? And you can't, and it will not be effective to bully people into doing the thing that you want them to do. That's obvious within a team, or it should be, but it's something that needs to be applied outside of your team, with people, with companies that you work with your agency, with your finance team, with, you know, people you outsource to, with the brands that you work with. I always say that I want us to be the nicest and coolest rocket ship in town. It's like everyone wants to work with us because we treat them well, they leave us feeling good, but we have high expectations and we're moving fast, you know? And it's like, come on the rocket ship, but you better hurry up, you better move at our pace. But at the end of the day, we're going to show up with kindness and respect and like humanity. It is important. It's important as you're building relationships in this industry. And it's important that your team is on board because they reflect you and they reflect the brand. And then it's important that you're on board with your team because it would be hypocritical otherwise, right? And it's something that I had to get better at over time.
I would say the one that has been so fundamental for me in this relationship is finding where structure works and leaves room for your creativity, and that you can create reliable structures, templates. Like for me, it was just templates for a really long time. It was my script templates. Our script is this very, very large document with all of these templates and tables and color coding and
all
of this stuff.
It's incredible what he's made.
That allows a team to actually work together with a lot of communication and structure that's reliable. Another version of that is what Izzy's built with the operation and the project management. It is structure that still allows for creativity. So any kind of repetitive creative system
that doesn't constrain the creativity.
It can constrain, or so you have to find the places where you can put structure and template around your creativity, because you're gonna have to be doing this over and over and over and over again. And that, to do that in chaos every single time is not sustainable. And so finding ways to boil down what you do into
Reduce lag, like just like where you can, so that you can just stick to doing the thing you do best.
Yeah, and getting rid of the sections that you don't. And that's honestly advice for hiring.
Piece of advice.
Like that's
yeah.
That's like how you hire, is you find the things that you don't have to love.
Not just that, you find the things, you look in the mirror with your most honest self, and you say, "What do I not do best? If I set my ego aside and I set all these protective measures to tell myself that I'm a good CEO aside, what do I not do best that someone else could do better? I'm a good operations person. I've built a company. It's working. But I will not be handling the operations in our company because it's not what I do best. And that is okay. It has to be okay. And it's also not what I love. I think if it were what I love, you know, I enjoy it. But if it were what I love, I might choose to come up, you know, you can come up with other reasons that something's valuable, but finding out what you do best and being really honest and then hiring for the things that you don't is essential.
That kind of structure.
Okay, the last one.
Four.
I know you only asked for three. But this one really, really matters, and it really matters with hiring. And it took me a while to be able to like put it into words. Caring more about getting it right than being right. And this could be applied to like everything. Marriage, being a parent, being a journalist, being a CEO, being a team member. In our team, there is an expectation that each and every one of us cares more about getting it right than being right. And that shows up in different ways. If I come to you with feedback, one, I hope you trust that that's a sign of respect and that I believe that you can grow on this team. And that if I weren't giving you feedback, that should like raise some red flags for
you're
you.
You're about to get
axed. Yeah. Yeah. Or maybe I just don't think you can like do that thing. And so, you know, when you get 100 notes on a cut, know that it's because I see the potential in that cut and the potential in you, and I know you can handle it, you know. But let's say I'm coming to you with feedback. My hope would be, and I express this in return, that you hear me and you take a moment to care more about getting it right than being right. It does not matter in that moment that your defense mechanisms come in, that you want to be right, that it hurts, that you're not right, that it's scary, that you're embarrassed. It doesn't matter. It really doesn't. I'm actually good to never talk about it again with my team members. We don't need to hash it out. I don't need to know why. Just tell me that you care about getting it right and that you'll do it differently next time. And that's it. All feelings gone. I'm not frustrated. You're good and you're going to improve. The other way that that shows up is in our journalism. We try really hard to create a culture that's allergic to posturing by showing up and needing to express that you know things. It is like the quickest way to shut down good dialogue, to show up and like pretend you know everything about Israel and Gaza when like there's a few people in the world who are experts and spend their entire careers on this. And they would say they don't know everything about Israel and Gaza, right? So like, it's just silly. So the goal there is that every single time we show up in a discussion or with ideas, that you care more about getting to the destination where you understand it, getting it right, which is going to mean dialogue and questioning and asking and
being wrong,
admitting what you don't know, instead of being right and showing up with all the information. If you have hires who can do that, you've got a really great team.
Yeah. There it is, folks. I love that.
If we didn't have a cap on this, we would keep going.
We have to do it again.
We would turn it into a journey.
But I think you guys, when we have our new studio,
this is essentially a voice note to the audience.
Yeah, basically.
This is a voice note to the audience. But man, I'm really excited for you guys. I think like what you've built is incredible. I think like it can't be stated enough that you guys are meticulous in your storytelling and in your creative work. Like every frame is thought about. And I think that is something that we should all really look at and respect deeply, because it's very easy to not do that.
Yeah.
You have the option to not do that, and you choose to do it in your style and your voice. And I love it. I love it. I can't wait to see what happens with New Press. Who knows? I imagine as you were talking, I was like, you'd be a great person to work for. I've never really had a job, but I think I would take a job with you.
Yeah. I hope so. I take a job with you. I can always do better. And I really mean that.
I think on the subject of empathy, like you have empathy towards creatives,
which
I think is important in the next cohort of CEOs.
So
hugely important.
Creative companies.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm not opening any other subject matter.
I have nothing to say to you.
Yeah. Thank you guys so much.
Never again.
Thanks guys.